Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode number 61. We're almost there. We're almost senior citizens at 65. We'll be there shortly. And you know, we got the usual regulars. We got Jason, Corbin, and Ryan. You really don't want to hear from them. So we got someone else on the mic. Someone that has the voices. If you know your limited game, you know this guy. He has all the resources. We got Marshall Sutcliffe.
Hey, Marcel, and the other guys that you so flippantly dismissed in the opener.
Wow, and then we are an afterthought to you, too.
Look, I'm just following his lead.
We were pretty accurately dismissed.
I'm sorry, guys, I want Marcel to think that I'm cool, so I'm going to be mean to you. I'm sorry. That's how Marshall got through high school.
See, I was actually on Planeswalker Asylum yesterday, so I had a great time over there, and I was looking forward to this cast. No, not really, because...
You know, I live in the same city as those guys, and they've teased me about coming on that cast before, and then they've never had me on.
I don't know, Corbin.
They don't like you, Corbin.
No, they're like, hey, you should come on next week, man. Let's set that up. And then that week will come around and just won't happen.
Yeah, I say that to my friends all the time that I don't actually want to hang out with.
It's you can't do that, guys. You can't make somebody think that they're going to be on your podcast and then not have them on, or they'll be tattooing another podcast's logo on their leg before you know it.
Yeah, shout out to Mike Marsala. He got the heavy metal tattoo, and that was a pretty cool article, so yeah. Don't know about that.
Yeah, that article he wrote was really good for someone who, you know, doesn't really primarily consider himself a writer. That was good stuff.
So Mark, you should go check it out. Mana Deprived.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Do you have any super fans yourself of? Because this is a fan of a podcast. He got a tattoo of the logo.
No, nobody's ever gotten a tattoo for the podcast, and I think I'm okay with that.
Well, it was actually, I mean, his story was kind of cool. It was, you know, he was at a low point in his life, so on and so forth. The podcast kind of, you know, pulled him out, gave him something to, you know, hold on to when he was going through it. So it was a pretty cool story. I think, it would be a lot weirder if it was just, oh, I'm a big fan. Now I got to get a tattoo.
Oh yeah, that seems cool. That I can appreciate that.
Yeah, heavy meta SDU is a family, so yeah, definitely. But let's jump into this cast. I mean, we got some juice here. It's been a juicy week for sure. If you haven't been following the drama,
we're gonna start with drama because I feel like that's dessert.
No, we gotta mention it and then gradually move on to the next thing and let people linger so they can listen later on.
Screw it, let's eat our dessert first.
There's so much drama this week though. I mean, it can be breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert all at once. Ooh, there's a ton of stuff that happened in Magic. I mean, which one do we want to start with?
Ryan's not gonna mention any of it.
Well, what do we want to start with? Do we want to start with the Medina thing, the Jace thing? I mean, where do we want to start here?
Let's start with MTG Mom because that makes me genuinely upset. So that's the whole story, mtgmom.com, which is probably the single most useful website in the history of ever. More useful than Google and Gmail combined.
Because what did Megan, it do?
Megan is actually, she's having a daughter, and she's closing down the website so she can concentrate on being a mother, so that leaves a lot of us.
Why don't you tell us what mtgmom.com is?
But everybody knows. mtgmom.com was a website that found all the tournaments that were happening pretty much everywhere and kind of put them all up on a calendar. So you would like click on the date and there would be a drop down menu of all the different events happening that day where they were. And you could click on the links and it would take you to the page where you could like register for those tournaments. It was a kind of simple idea, but it was just so useful and nobody else is doing it that everyone really relied on that site. So now that she's not doing it anymore, a lot of people don't really know what to do with themselves. I'm hopefully somebody else will come along and take over, but for now it's sort of sad. It was an insanely useful website and it was a great service she provided and we're gonna miss her, definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will step up to fill that void. I mean, it was such a like you said, simple but great idea when she jumped on it that I'm sure is not going to go away.
What is going to go away?
What is going away, yeah, is,
Legit MTG is no longer going to be the same Legit MTG. We got to say goodbye to friend of the cast, Jonathan Medina. He had some life changes that he had to make and readjust his priorities. And so now Legit is gone, and there you're seeing the mass exodus of all the people that was there to support Legit.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, because I wrote for the site, you know, the timing for me personally with John leaving just seemed that it was a time for me to move on and, you know, take on a new challenge as well. You know, John and the team at Legit were great. I mean, he brought me on to write for him, asked me to do it, and was really good to me, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, we're sad to see him go. You know, hopefully maybe one day he'll be back. But as I understand it, Legit MTG, while the store may be going away, possibly someone may come in and take it over. It's kind of unclear right now. They do still plan on producing content, and they still have some really good content over there. So while it will be changing, but I don't think it'll be disappearing.
And that's all we're going to say about it.
And that's that.
John actually wrote a kind of heartfelt goodbye letter. It's got a few more details if you go on to Legit. It's under community or culture or something like that. So if there's a little bit more information you were looking for, we don't really feel comfortable delving too much into his personal life, but he's volunteered a lot of information, so it's all going to be in that goodbye letter on Legit.
Speaking of goodbye, let's talk about that Comic-Con and those blacked-out planeswalkers. Oh, my God.
Oh, I missed your segues.
You know,
no segue talk.
But yeah, so if everyone didn't know, we're talking about the Blacked Out Planeswalkers last week, and they were going to be supposedly posted on Hasbro for $65. But everyone that showed up to the Comic-Con bought every last copy they could, and now they're on eBay, and they went up from $250 to $350 to $400, now $500. And SCG is buying at $350, so that can give you an idea of where that price is going to be.
What were those again? I never really understood exactly what those things were about. They're just like alternate art versions of the Planeswalkers, like what the M14 ones or what is that?
Yeah, the M14 Planeswalkers and their darked out art. It's, like, I mean, it's pretty cool art if you haven't seen it. It's, everything's black and darkened and it's, you know, really unique. You know, I don't know how many they had printed, but they planned on basically taking whatever was left over after Comic-Con and selling it on the website. And for whatever reason, they thought there would be leftovers, but there weren't. There were like 6-hour lines at Comic-Con, and now they're all gone.
Yeah.
It's one of just these super rare things.
That's become a really silly phrase out of Watsy's mouth, whatever's left over. Because that's not a thing. Like, oh, you know, whatever Modern Masters product we don't give away at GP Vegas is going to go back to stores.
Yeah, how did they not know? Like, these were, everyone wanted them. And
honestly, they've never done a Comic-Con exclusive before, so they had no idea what the demand would be. Comic-Con is not all Magic people. It's gradually turning into next season shows on the Sci-Fi Channel / summer blockbuster movie /
it's
pop culture sort of a thing, and oh, there are a few panels for comic books, and maybe Joe Quesada is doing a signing. But for the most part, it's Comic-Con's not really 100% comics anymore. It's turning into just kind of nerd fest. So there's so many people there, but they all have such different interests that are you really going to wait in a 6-hour line just to get some exclusive planeswalkers if you're not interested in Magic?
I'd wait in a 6-hour line to get a $500 bill. Yes, you are correct. Right. I would be doing that.
Yeah, but who even knows? Not everybody knows.
There are plenty of people who knew because, I mean, they're all gone.
Cause they're so, I mean, honestly, like, Marshall, I put a link in the show notes if you want to get an idea, but they're, you know, they're foiled out, so all the green or the color on the planeswalkers are foiled and blacked out. These are the ultimate pimp. So like, if they couldn't print enough, like, they could have printed as many as they needed to fill the demand there, they could have sold online, and they would have still sold out. And, to say Wizards doesn't understand that, you know, the special product is not gonna have this kind of demand is bullshit. I mean, look at, you got Commander's Arsenal, you got From the Vault, everything selling for excessively amounts of money. Oh, these Planeswalkers, which happen to look very badass, are not going to sell out? I honestly don't think they got
Comic-Con. That's like saying, oh, well, a million LGSs are getting Commander's Arsenal, so we expect people waiting in a 6-hour line at Comic-Con when
But they said they were going to sell them online. They had to out to sell it online.
Oh, they thought they were going to sell them online.
Well, yeah, so they had that out as well. So how were they not going to have, I mean, could they not pass these out as promotions somewhere? Do you not think that people would want to?
No, I think they really thought that they would give out maybe half of them at Comic-Con and then the rest would be online. I don't think they anticipated getting rid of all of them at Comic-Con. I mean,
these look sick, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. They just look sick. It's just...
They look savage. And so they're like super, super rare and they look badass. Yeah. It does seem like a recipe. I actually wanted to ask you guys, not to go too far off track on this actual premium set, but you know, you guys are much more in tune with what's going on with how people react to these type of things. I get some of it just because people are like, oh, you do a podcast. I'll talk to you about this. But you guys actually do a podcast about finance stuff. Like, how mad or frustrated do people get when Wizards puts out a sweet product that they simply either literally can't get? Like, this seems like one of those things that, like, you just cannot get this, period. Like, you never have a shot at buying this even remotely close to retail. But even then, you know, looking at the From the Vaults 20 and a lot of the From the Vault sets, and you guys mentioned Commander's Arsenal as well, like, you never actually get a shot to buy those for retail. Yeah. That can't sit well with people, right? I mean, I've heard a lot of unrest about this. Do you think this is like a good thing to keep doing? Keep releasing these things? Like, doesn't it just piss a bunch of people off?
It has to, I mean, because like, go ahead.
Well, I would say it probably annoys players, but it annoys players because they want these things. I don't think anyone's leaving the game because they can't get these. What they are is a giant gift to LGS owners. And that's where they grow the game, is at the LGS level. You give this to the LGS owners, they're going to sell them all, they're going to make a lot of money on them. And it's just a very inexpensive for Wizards way to, you know, send a gift to their LGS owners as a thank you. I mean, because that's where they've grown the game, is at the store level. It's a part of this push they've done the last few years to move everything to the stores.
I think that makes a lot of sense, like, from a business perspective, but there's this weird vibe that while Wizards is benefiting, and while the local game stores are benefiting, it feels like it's a little bit at the expense of the players, right? Like, you get this sort of feeling like you're like, am I being taken advantage of here?
Yes.
I know that that's not technically true from like an economic standpoint. The truth is, look, if you want this thing, this is what it costs, and you can either choose to buy it or not, right? But there's this veneer over it that isn't that, right? Because, for example, if we read about a new From the Vaults and it's like, it's $39 or it's $30 or it's $50 or whatever the actual retail is. I don't know, but come on. Like, you know, you can't get it for that. That has this weird feeling to it, right? It's just immediately we're supposed to be excited by this product, yet we know that we can't get it for that price. And that just feels weird.
It is a feel bad situation. It's not good. It's not good for any business to have that. It's like, you have this product people want. They can't get it. They can't get their hands on it. There's no way they can, but they got to spend too much money. Like, Aaron Forsythe today, he wrote back concerning this whole thing about the MSRP. And then, quote, he says, if stores had to honor MSRP, someone buys them all out and flips them. At least now stores can capitalize on any disparity. So they understand that there's going to be disparity, but the problem they see is the flipping and the people that are speculating. And I think that is part of what's hurting the market. Like, I know you guys work for QS, but to me, something that I heard that really kind of outraged me is that, you know, they had an email blast that they had set up for when the Black Planeswalkers were going to become available, so that everyone on QS would get this blast, go buy the Black Planeswalkers. Now you got, I mean, I understand that's just how the game is with them, but now you got people that are purely in for the financial reasons going to buy out all these products that the players want to get. Now it becomes a situation where the market is now, the speculators are controlling the market and the players are kind of getting fucked, because that's really what ends up happening. I mean,
the players are going to pay what they're willing to pay though. Like, there's no money to be made in speculation if the demand isn't so much higher than the supply.
Right. What I have learned by working with all the different, like, types of players, all the way from the super casual who play in the cafeterias of colleges up to the, you know, the hardcore grinders, is the hardcore grinders are the people who want to pimp out their decks for the most part. And then you have your EDH crowd too. But that crowd either has the money and is going to pay for it, or is just like, okay, maybe I'll get, sometimes they're the ones who get to flip those copies. The super casual players, who is the majority of Wizards market, don't even care one way or the other. If they get one, awesome. Those are sometimes the people who go to these Comic-Cons. And, the people in the middle, really, they understand. They just can't afford it. It's not a big deal. Most people who I've talked to are like, oh yeah, the price got out of hand and I'm just not going to buy them. Or, oh, maybe I'll trade for one. And sometimes it almost becomes kind of like that person's version of power. They feel like that's what they're aspiring to. They want to go out and get one. They want to go trade for one. And I have a lot of people who, same thing with like the commander stuff. They're like, oh, I really want to pimp out my deck. They don't care what the price is. To them, it's just a goal. Like it could be a $20 card. It could be a $100 card. They don't care. They just want to get it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, and if the demand's not real, people will be stuck. Like how many times have you seen somebody like paid $120 for like an FTV Realms and then they're trying to get 90 out of it and only lose 30? Like that happens all the time. If their demand isn't real, then eventually it's going to trail off and people that are just trying to flip that sort of thing are going to, you know, end up eating it and not do that kind of thing again.
But so the demand's been real though.
If the demand is real, then it doesn't matter how many they make or at what price they give them out. Somebody is going to be upset that they paid a little more than they wanted to. And if you look at Commander's Arsenal, like all these people are like, oh, well, you know, it's bullshit that I can't get that because it's so expensive. It wasn't for everybody. The Commander sets were for everybody. The Commander's Arsenal were for the people that really wanted the foil Sylvan Library and the foil Scroll Rack and that kind of stuff. And they were willing to pay that money.
Well, you know what I think is
those
for?
Decks. That's who that was for. Everybody thinks that everything should be for them. And it's just not the case.
Well, from the Vault 20. We got Jason from the Vault 20. I really think that's for the players right there. I really think that set is just a slap in the face to everyone that's been stuck on Jace going to $1,000 for a foil of Jace. These are Jaces to get in the hands of the players, and I think there's going to be some other key cards in there that should get in the hands of the players. But now you're talking about, right now, people are saying it's going to be a $400 from the Vault. It could be more than $600, and it's just like really, to me, like...
I mean, so what are they supposed to do? There's no answer to that. You can't stop it. Like, if they're gonna print those cards, like, they're gonna be printed, and they're gonna be out there, and you can't stop the market from reacting as it will. Like, it doesn't matter what the market is. Like, if there's speculators and there's money to be made, people will make money on it. And you
so
can't
what,
stop it.
What if they do direct sales?
You know? Who gives it? Does Wizards owe us a certain number of cheap reprints every year? Does Wizards owe the players that? Everything Wizards should do should be to make the game better for the people who are playing it.
The thing is, we see that 1% of players who are angry about it. Like, the majority of people who are able to get these cards, and like, I see casual players all the time with one or two of these Commander's Arsenal cards, and usually it's the cheap ones, and they don't care. They're super happy to get that one pimped out card. Like, those are the majority of the people you're trying to appease, and they are happy.
To me, it's the question isn't, like, that's fine. If Wizards wants to put something out, and it's like, look, this isn't for everybody, and you probably won't be able to afford it because we're not going to print very many of these and there's not going to be that many floating around, so it's going to get really expensive. Look, I could take that. I could say, look, I didn't go to the Comic Con. I wasn't able to get these Planeswalkers and there wasn't that many around. And were they sold down there?
Yeah.
Or did they just give them away? I mean, so whatever, right? They were limited availability and that's fine. But like, if that's not what Wizards is saying, right? Like when they put out Commander's Arsenal, you see it on their website. I'm Joe Schmo. Right? Like, I don't have a degree in economics. I don't care about supply and demand. I see, oh, there's this cool thing that I'm really interested in. Well, it's $75, but I think I can make some room in my budget and I'm going to go down to my store and I want to get one of those.
Right.
And then you go down to the store with your $75 and your local game store owner is kind of laughing at you like, dude, you weren't going to get this for $75 ever. Right? Like, they're $250 right now and they might go up, but I could probably still cut you in at $250 if I get another one in stock. Right? Yeah. Like, remember, these are normal people. These aren't speculators and they're not necessarily, super deep on the financial side of Magic. They're just consumers. Like, they don't give a crap about any of this stuff. They're just like, look, I read on your website I could buy this for this price and I can't. There's an association there and it doesn't feel good right now. Mm-hmm. Should Wizards change it? I don't know. I mean, I kind of agree with the sentiment that like, well, why does Wizard have to like coddle us at every moment? But at the same time, I much prefer that it was in the open and it wasn't like, well, here's a suggested retail price on this thing and that had any meaning. Like for a deck, for a box of Magic cards, the suggested retail price, you know, usually you're paying less or whatever, but it's pretty consistent, right? Like when a box comes out, you usually have a pretty good idea of what you're going to pay to get that box. You know what a booster pack costs. These things are consistent. For some reason, though, with these limited edition runs, they have a manufacturer's retail price, yet that is, it's a joke. Like, it's not, it should just never even be put out there,
Well, but they don't, yeah, I mean as much as they do control what's in there, they don't control like what those prices are going to come out to. So what are they supposed to say? There's no MSRP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just sell them to the stores and say, look, but the stores can sell them for whatever they think they can get them for. So we don't know what it's going to cost you, but go talk to your local game store and figure it out. I mean, there's probably a law against it. They probably need to put something on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they have to.
And that would piss people off too. If they did that, it might be different people pissed off, but it would be the same number of people pissed off.
People eventually get it though, because now they don't get the MSRP. Every time we hear, oh, the set's going to be released and it's going to be above MSRP, you hear the same questions, the same reasons, the same people giving the same answers, and it's hard for people to digest that.
There are plenty of stores that sell that shit at MSRP.
Two of the three
there are.
My city sell them at MSRP. They did the same thing with Modern Masters.
Hey, you're lucky. You're lucky. I understand that.
But the point is, like, they have to do that because some stores do sell them at that. I mean, so they have to have something. And, like, what else are they supposed to do? Like, well, if Jace is, like, over $100 or whatever, you say, well, I guess now we can't put Jace in this because it's going to make the price of this set go up too much.
Isn't
like,
Jace you know what the FTV they need to foil?
Do? They need to do direct sales. Because, like, I'm on Moto. I could get a direct sale from Wizards. I'm going to buy from the vault for $40. I'm going to get my Jace and everything else. And I'm going to be playing with it because I don't play paper cards. I only play motor card. So I'm going to get the benefit of from the vaults. I'm going to be happy as shit. But everyone else that I know in the community that are paper players are going to be having this. Now, Wizards can do a direct sale maybe one time, maybe twice a year. Not enough that they're threatening any of the local game stores. But I think certain sets like this from the vaults, maybe not, or maybe some other set that needs to go in the player's hands, they could do a direct sale. Or, they do a moto sale. And they could be redeemable, so it's like a way of working around a direct sale.
Sure, but it's like the same thing though, like if there's a direct sale or like, cause the whole point of them is to make them collectible and it's like, you know, a gift to game stores or whatever, but say they put them on their website at MSRP, well then they're gone in 20 minutes and everyone says, well I'm not at home at that time, I guess I'm screwed. I can't.
They print enough till demand ceases. They just print them and they sell them at 40 and they just...
So then you're printing...
That tanks the price then.
Yeah, you're printing infinite Jaces and then people go,
it's another fucking Chronicles. And then, then the finance community just...
Hey, if it happens on some... Game. I think if it happens on some... The way that it's going, like, the Magic is becoming too expensive for people to actually get in here and play like they need to be. So there's gotta be some give or take. I think
I'm sorry.
Like that is not bad.
If it costs too much for your one of a kind spin down die and your foil, only time available foil Sylvan Library, I don't feel bad for you. If you can't get the card for your deck, if you can't put together an FNM deck for less than $1,800 for standard, then Magic's too expensive. But if your pimp foils like that's too expensive, then don't pimp your deck out.
I wanted to play Modern. I got my Tarmogoyfs because Modern Masters dropped the price, but it's right back where it was before. Modern's still prohibitively expensive to get back
into. Sure.
That's the demand, though. More people playing Modern. I can attest to that from that road trip.
Yeah, but they wanted Modern to become more popular. Now they let the flood valves go, and now the demand is higher than what they expected. Like,
I mean, but what can they do? Like, how can you blame them? They tried. Like, they made Modern Masters to try to make it more accessible. And they have to toe that fine line of, if we print too much, it's Chronicles, which nearly killed them as a business. And then the other line is to make, you have to get the cards out to people. Like, you can't blame them for trying to walk that line there.
Okay. It's actually a miracle the game survived Chronicles. Like, if you were playing back then, like I know Ryan and I were, actually miraculous that the game
Half the people who were playing in my playgroup back then quit playing. Half. At least half.
Okay.
So I mean, that's the point. It's hard to blame Wizards for all this because they're not, like, they have all this data and they know all of this, but, like, they can't just make things happen the way they want it to. Like,
and they're
I
also bet not allowed to base decisions on those.
I think they've been a little too conservative because they've been a little too conservative lately. When are they going to print a set that's going to be too much? I mean,
sure, but like, look at it from their side. If you're too conservative, yeah, some players are upset, but you know, at least you tried. If you're too aggressive and you just go Chronicles on the Modern market, then you like look at what happened the first time.
They don't have players in general.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like
I'm not saying Chronicles too, but you know, whatever.
I agree with what they're doing.
So let's move on. Do you guys want to do the picks of the week? Or?
Yeah, let's move on.
Yep.
Picks of the week. Who wants to start?
I want to go first.
All right, good. Mine will lead into that. So.
Okay, so I found a card that like the spread is like 5% on, Right now on TCG Player, you can get Advent of the Worm for like $4.25, and the Star City buy is $4. That's actually retarded. I can't believe the spread is this low on Advent. So if Star City is willing to pay $4, you should be willing to pay $4.25. So after I wrote that in my article, one of my Twitter followers said, "Hey, I got Advent of the Worm on eBay for $2.50. Is that a good price?" Yes, that's great. That's under Star City's buy price. If you wanted to, you can make $1.50 just flipping those to SCG. Buy Advent of the Worm. Buy them for $2.50. Even buy them for $4.50. The card is probably going to go up. You saw how much play got in block, and block is what we're going to have after everything rotates. Advent is a 5/5 for 4 instant speed. It makes a token you can populate. We'll still have populate stuff going forward. It works well with Ryan's pick of the week. I love Advent of the Worm, and I really like it at $2.50 to $4.
I think that's a really good call, too, because like the same factors that are driving Voice of Resurgence to be $40+ apply to Advent. Like, it's a small set. It was opened as a one-of in draft, and it was only opened as a one-of in draft for like a month until Modern Masters kept it from being drafted at all. Like,
yeah.
Set is set up to have very expensive cards going forward.
Restored.
Can we just do a Finance 101 for anybody who may have like joined this show in like the last few episodes? When I say spread, the spread is the percentage difference between the highest buy price and the lowest sale price. If you are a Quiet Speculation Insider and use the Trader Tools app, it actually takes the difference between the highest buy price and TCG mid, which I feel is a pretty decent metric. So if the spread is 0%, that means somebody is buying it for TCG mid, like a dealer is buying it for TCG mid. 100% spread is like somebody's buying it for pennies and it's like $10. So the lower the spread, the more likely you are to want to pick up the card. I feel like a high dealer buy price is the dealer expressing confidence that the card will go up. Otherwise, either they can't keep it in stock, ergo it's popular, or they think it's a good price to buy in now and it'll go up later. So anytime you see a low spread, you're going to want to buy the card. So that's what, when I say spread, that's what I meant.
Yep. And on the topic of populating and such, my pick's a little more off the wall, but I went to a recent SCG 5K this past weekend. And I watched one guy top 8 with the deck and another guy placed very well, I believe top 16. And it was running, you know, the Advent of the Worm. It was just green-white good stuff. And its finisher of sorts was Scion of the Vidugazi. But yeah, I believe Scion of the Vidugazi, after watching it, do really well this past weekend. I think it's kind of a sleeper. I picked up quite a few copies after watching it. I mean, that you can find them on any website for bulk. The card is, it doesn't seem super popular right now, and I don't think it's going to, you know, all of a sudden spike here in the next week or two. But I think that after rotation, given the fact that the green-white was already a thing in block, I think this guy kind of adds that extra little level of, you know, building you against Supreme Verdicts. Now you have Rootbound Defenses and this to be able to really rebuild quickly. And I think it's going to be a pretty key part of those token populate decks, which I think are going to be out there.
Honestly, I don't see it, but...
Well, the thing I like about the card is, worst case scenario, it's a Cloud Goat Ranger. So if you peel it off the top, everyone's like, oh, it populates and it's your only dude, it makes a bird. So it'll, when it populates, you'll at the very least have the body plus the two bird tokens, and that's not bad for a five drop. I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, yeah, the two birds, like, I mean, it's no like Broodmate Dragon, but it is multiple bodies at least. I mean, it's the kind of card to me that it could see play, and it could certainly spike to, you know, $3 or $4 or something after rotation. It's also probably one of those cards that as new cards get added to the pool is one of the first ones cut, you know, so it's probably something to keep in mind. But
I mean, I can see that.
I like the spec at a dollar, you know.
Yeah, $1. I mean,
it's not even a dollar. You can
it's
find
less than a dollar.
Yeah. I think the copies I bought were like 32 cents a piece.
Oh.
So, like, honestly, I think everybody should have one no-risk spec in their portfolio. Something that's a bulk rare that it could hit and you could make some serious money. And even if it goes up a little bit, if you sell enough to break even and keep all those copies, worst case scenario, you sell for bulk and that's your profit. But if it hits, you can make some serious money. So stuff like this is my bread and butter. I don't have too many different ones, but if everyone has at least one, I think that's probably a good way to go about it. And this doesn't seem like a bad choice.
So should we call them science specs?
Maybe Edbridge Chance specs. Or Master of the Pearl Trident.
I like Seance better.
Really awesome. I think even with Seance, like, you don't have to play with everyone, but I didn't lose money on Seance, and I won't lose money on this guy. Like, worst case scenario, I can put my copies back up on TCG Player and potentially sell them for 32 cents. Or if I have to, I can sell them for 18 cents in bulk rare.
Sure.
Like, you don't lose that much.
Yeah, it's low risk. So I think that's fine.
Okay, so who wants to go next? Marshall, do you have anything for us?
I don't have a real one. Well, I've got one that I actually, so here's the thing, right? I trade at my local store a little bit here and there, but like, I'm not, like, I trust your guys' opinions much more than my own when it comes to finance stuff. Cause like, I kind of want to throw this out to you as like more of a question than a suggestion. Cause I don't consider myself an authority on this stuff. Something that I've been picking up lately, here and there in a trade is kind of throw in slash, you know, a piece of the trade are, some of the uncommons from Modern Masters, I've noticed that, you know, especially the alternate art ones, like I've got a Lightning Helix in my hand right now, and that's kind of the one that I've been, every time I do a trade with somebody, I'm like, got any Modern Masters Lightning Helixes? And it's like, people value them a bit, but they're certainly tradable at this point, like nobody's like hoarding them from me or anything like that, and I can get them as sort of like filler for a trade at $3 or $4 or whatever they're worth. Is that smart? Like, my gut tells me that these things, like, if we're not going to get any more printings of these, of this special artwork ones, that they're going to just go up. Like, cause that card's going to be popular in Modern forever.
Oh, yeah.
I think the
pendulum swung too far in the other direction. When Modern Masters was everywhere, I think everyone's like, oh, well, these uncommons are everywhere. They're worth nothing. I think people are undervaluing that stuff. Just because it's everywhere now, but no one's drafting that anymore. So
right. There's no more coming into the, like, unless they put this artwork in another one.
I think that same art was from a Johnny versus Nico Ballas. Right? Okay. But who cares? That's the two places you can get it. There's new art on Trigon Predator. And you have stuff that was like $5-6 in commons. Even if it falls down to like $2 or $3, it'll probably settle above where it is right now.
Right, okay. Absolutely. I mean, it's peak supply right now. And these are the kind of things that people are like, oh yeah, they're out there. And they say that for a year and the price maybe ticks up a little, whatever. But then like, you know, a year or two down the road, people realize, oh hey, these just aren't anywhere. And it'll double overnight when somebody buys out TCG Player.
Well, the event's starting and who's got them in their binder?
Yeah, like this is the kind of stuff that, you know, people, the price memory on it is, oh, it's this and these are all over the place, but eventually they won't and they'll just jump. Basically like Roman did. They're like, oh yeah, well, this is, you know, $8 to $10, blah, blah, blah. And then when people realize, oh hey, there just aren't that many of these out there, all of a sudden it's $16. Like, the uncommons are really easy because people, like you said, people don't really care about them right now and they'll give them up. Path to Exile, I think, is obviously the best one just because, you know, Kitchen Finks is good too.
Yeah, Finks seems like a good one. Unfortunately, Path has the same artwork as before and it's been reprinted like a bunch of times, but still it's like,
hasn't mattered before.
Premium.
Like, it's still
bad. Yeah, it's still just ridiculously good.
A+ removal.
Yeah, I mean, it's $5 right now and people will give them to you $5. And if they don't, it's been reprinted every year for like the past 2 to 3 years. Like, it's been in like 5 different sets now. If a year or two goes by without being put in something, cause I think they've put enough of them onto the market, it'll be $10. You know, like, this stuff isn't going.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it holds the title as probably best removal spell in Modern.
Yeah.
That's gotta pull a lot of weight. So, all right. Well, thanks, guys. I'm gonna keep doing that then.
Good.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep doing it.
It'll be harder not to tell everybody about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a pick of the week this week, and this is, you know, another one of those we've been talking about post rotation because we're finally to that point of the year where it's time to start looking ahead. And mine is Exiva, Rakdos Blood Witch, and this is something we talked about kind of in correlation with Colonian Hydra. But I like it even outside of that. It's the red guy. It's black red, 4 mana, 3/3, first strike, haste, unleash, and other creatures with a 1/1 counter on them have haste. So like, it's $1, right? Like Cool Stuff Inc. has a bunch in stock at $1.25. Like, I don't think it's Hellrider. I don't think it's that strong. And so I don't think it's going to hit the $14 that Hellrider hit, but there's no reason that this doesn't top out, you know, a post rotation Rakdos aggro deck. You know, and you've got like Hellhole Flayer at the 3-drop spot. Like, the pieces are there. So this is the kind of thing that, you know, at $1 card from Dragon's Mage, it could hit $4 or $5 at least, you know, if Rakdos becomes a deck after rotation. So I just think this is, talking about those low risk stocks, this is definitely one of them that I've been going pretty deep on.
This was a Maze Runner, right?
Yeah.
So everybody that played Rakdos was handed one of these?
That doesn't matter.
That doesn't, no, I just like, that they'll be in binders.
Thing about this is like, you know, like aggro is very popular after post rotation, and Rakdos has a lot of very good cards, you know, for the aggro deck. So this is a good little, I would not say this is a bad pick at all.
A 4 mana cost for first strike haste. It's even not counting the like other ability on it, which is relevant occasionally. So
as long as people realize they're going to have to maybe do a few nuanced things to build with this, Unleash is definitely a good way to build with this, but just saying we need another Hellrider. Sometimes in the past when people were like, oh, this card is this set's blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe that, you know, the post rotation landscape won't need that. But I think that Rakdos has enough pieces, and especially with how well this works with the Unleash mechanic, I think the risk of that is low in this case.
I would almost compare it to Falcon Wrath Aristocrat because it's got the 4 toughness, it's got the haste, and because the first strike is almost kind of unblockable, almost pseudo fighting, you know, flying, so there's to say that.
And it powers up your, you know, it makes the Rakdos Cackler you draw on turn 5 a lot less worse than it, you know, is now, or was before, or whatever. Like, right now, the power level of the format is too high, and, like, Hellrider's usually strictly better in the decks you want, and blah, 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 all of that. But post-rotation, like, this and Hellhole Flare, I'm going deep on, because Hellhole Flare has, like, incredible ability to close out games. So, like, and that's an uncommon that I think even has upside.
All
right. Exalva's a foil, too, right, in the intro pack?
Yeah.
So you can pick up those, too, somehow. I don't know how that affects the spec aspect. I
mean, it just makes it so that the foils aren't that much higher than the regular copies, which is actually fine too, especially in this case, because it being a legend, there will be EDH play down the line. So you can get the foils really close to the actual price of what a regular non-foil copy would cost right now. So
as time goes on, the foil will move away from the non-foil price. Yeah, so like, you have a good opportunity to pick them up now for cheap, and then when the price diverges later, your profit margin increases.
Yeah, like right now, looking at like 1.2, in a year it could be 2.0 just because it would be about even with the other foils where, you know, it's just about double the regular price. But then as you go further with these casual cards, and especially these generals, anything that's a legend, a lot of times you'll find it pulling farther ahead. So, I mean, the card may only be $2 after it rotates out of standard, but the foil may be $10.
Right. I mean, and I don't even know if it has, like, that much potential or whatever. And like I said, I don't think it's going to 15 like Hellrider. But, like, there's no reason this wouldn't go from $1 to $4 and you make easy money on it if it's played at all, even taking into account all those extra copies.
Absolutely. And I think the new legendary rule change makes this card a lot more appealing. So, I mean, if they lock it down in any way, you're not just stuck having to kill your own before you can play another one.
Yeah.
I like your guys' picks for these Dragon's Maze. I really think that's a, you know, good thing to get out to the people that Dragon's Maze is, because of Modern Masters and the M14s is right back to back, that it's not going to be drafted as much, and we're going to see probably a Avacyn's Restore type of effect towards prices, especially after rotations.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. Is
picking up all of the Maze Runners, or almost all of them.
It sucks comparing this to AVR, because AVR was just a garbage draft format, and RGD is so much fun to draft, but...
Oh, I love it.
Like Modern Masters came out and stepped on its toes, and honestly, I'm going to say that M14 is one of the best core sets to play limited that they've ever had. So, we'll find out.
We have an expert on the subject.
before we get there, I just want to say buy Aetherlink. It's at $4 on cool stuff right now. It's a couple dollars online.
It's like an 8% spread.
This card is a finisher. Like, I love Nimbazette, but Nimbazette is gone. Because Aetherlink is the shit, period, hands down. It's going to be the shit until it rotates. There's not a better finisher for control.
And now, Marcel, address what a lot of people on the finance subreddit are saying. Some of them listen to this cast. I want to hear you address the fact that Aetherlink is going to be played as a 2-of max.
I play decks with 3-of. 3-of makes guaranteed. I mean, I could see a 2-of, but I think 3-of, I don't see it ever being a 4-of.
Is that going to matter if it's not a 4-of?
No, because it's the Dragon's Maze, and again, what we just talked about, how Dragon's Maze is going to be so limited, and Aetherlink is just that good. That
Marcel control deck, says you know. No. There you have it, folks. Yep, I'm with you, Marcel. I think being a 2 or 3 of, like, it's not going to matter. And the spread on these is so low, like, I think dealers really think these are going to go up. You should buy at what they're buying at.
I feel bad I bought so many Niv-Mizzets. I got to sell for so cheap.
Yeah.
No, keep them, man. They're like, that's a good EDH general.
EDH is not a Moto. Moto EDH.
Oh,
I mean, I'm with you.
Pay for my Moto, because I only paid like $2 a piece in paper.
Yeah, I paid $2.
I mean, oh yeah, I guess Moto's a little different. Like in paper, you can still get $2 a piece for them.
I could probably get like $1.50. I'm not losing bad, but it's still like, yeah, you know, yeah. I expected to do better. You know?
And that is the problem with picking these smaller cards like this that haven't already proven themselves is by the time it comes around to where they could prove themselves, sometimes you have something that's printed that's just better. There's been a number of cards that have happened that to me in the past, and that's why you usually, if you stick to the cards that are fairly bulk, and I guess it doesn't work as well online because the prices take a lot harder hit if they're seeing no play than they do in real life.
But if you remember, Marcel was diversified. When he was saying that, he was also saying, get Trostani, get Armada Worm. And those have hit. So even if he takes a total bath on the Niv-Mizzet, he made so much on the Trostanis, which went from like 2 to 8, that like it doesn't matter how much you spend on the Niv-Mizzets. If you can out them for bulk, you're still not going to lose a ton.
So since we got Marcel here, and he plays a lot of limited, and he keeps, I know you keep your tickets, you talk about a slow bleed. It's hard to go completely infinite and, you know, pay completely for your limited. Do you want to dive into how you do this and your strategies and whatnot?
Yeah, sure. So on Magic Online, you know, we get to talk about this on the show quite a bit. And, we're actually have an episode coming up soon with my co-host Brian Wong, who does go infinite and has for a long time. And he's going to talk about how he does it. And, it's really interesting. I've had a chat with him before about it, and we're going to go deep on the show. But, I'm not quite the superhuman Magic player that he is. He really is a top level, excellent player. And I'm just a good player. And so for me, going infinite isn't really my goal. And when we talk on the podcast about this type of subject, you know, we want to be realistic for our listener base, right? And there's going to be a few of our listeners that can actually pull this off of actually just never putting money back. And that happens. Some people do it, but it's just very rare. And a more realistic goal is to just lower that cost per draft down as low as you can get it. And there's a few different ways that we recommend to do it on the show, and, you know, it's kind of general knowledge as well. The first thing is to avoid 4-3-2-2 drafts. Those are the poison. Basically, I mean, we've written a few articles, and there's a lot of things that I can link, but the long and short of it is that the 4-3-2-2 draft, meaning first gets 4 packs, second gets 3 packs, and then if you make it to the second round, you're getting 2 packs. They pay out 11 booster packs total for the same buy-in that an 8-4 does and the same buy-in that a Swiss draft does, both of which pay out 12 packs instead of 11. And a lot of people just overlook that, and they're just like, whatever, it's one pack among all of us. Who really cares, right? But the fact is, it matters in a huge, huge way on your bottom line. If you're going to be drafting a lot, you just can't draft 4-3-2-2s. There is no point at which your skill is high enough to not play 8-4s, but low enough to not just be playing Swisses, where it will line up with 4-3-2-2s. That's kind of the question we always get after the fact. But when you take an entire booster pack out of the prize pool, it makes it just untenable as far as keeping ahead. So that's the first thing you want to do, is just avoid those. And I never play them. I shouldn't say never. They will bring back old formats in only 4-3-2-2, and I'll play them then. But I know I'm taking the worst of it, and I'm just okay with it in that case, and because it's the only option I have, and I want to play the format. So
is there an argument to be made that 4-3-2-2s are easier to win because the quote unquote better players are playing 8-4s? Is that a concern, you know, consideration at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So the general hierarchy for skill level, though this is usually overstated by most people who actually play on Magic Online a lot, but it is true to a point, is Swiss have the least experienced or worst players. 4-3-2-2s have sort of the middle ground, and then the 8-4 has the good players. That's kind of how they're viewed, and it's not too far off. I mean, you know, the all the people that I know that grind on Moto play 8-4s exclusively. I only play 8-4s. Like, the people that are serious about getting better and testing themselves, you know, do play those. But you see plenty of goofy stuff and, you know, idiots that are in there, like, what are you doing? Like, there's a whole lot of nonsense that goes along in 8-4s as well, but you will see a little bit more at the Swiss level. Now, so when you're talking about your win percentage, you know, the question becomes, okay, I'm not good enough to be successful to win enough 8-4s, so I'm going to go to 4-3-2-2 where my win percentage is higher because I'm playing against worse players. And that's a logical thing that makes some sense to people. But when you actually run the numbers, which we have, you are actually much better off just staying at the Swiss level as opposed to going to 4-3-2-2, because no matter if your win percentage is high enough that you can beat 4-3-2-2s for higher than you could a Swiss, then you should just be playing 8-4s because you will just crush those. And basically that gap doesn't exist. The people don't have that big of a gap that aren't already playing 8-4s. So it polarizes you to playing one or the other. given that they both pay out the same, it's just a different payout structure. The problem that we face is people inherently seem to love the idea of being able to profit from a draft. So they're sucked into 4-3-2-2s because they have this safe feeling where they're like, look, if I win the first round, I'm going to get something back. And that makes them feel safe and good about their decision. Then if I happen to win the whole draft, I'll even be up a pack. And that makes them feel even better because like, there's this sort of, you know, the dream off in the horizon where it's like, I could go infinite, right? But the fact is when you strip away a pack from the prize pool, it just eliminates your ability to go infinite, even if you're really excellent. And again, if you were really excellent, you would be putting your skills at the 8-4 level where you can win 8 packs. You know, that's a significant bump from your 3-pack and 2-ticket investment. And it actually gives you the chance to string together some wins and put together, you know, a real nice collection.
See, I actually, like, I subscribe to your logic behind it, but especially with Dragon's Maze, I've been playing a lot of 4-3-2-2 because somehow, just because, like you're saying, the safety measure, but what I feel is like with Swiss, if you get a bad deck, you're stuck playing that bad deck for too long. And if you're in an 8-4, there's times you can have the best deck and you just get crushed, maybe the first round, maybe the second round, and it happens to be a variance. And somehow the safety net again in the 2 packs that if you're able to pull a shock land or something out of the pack, you kind of can negate that, and it's almost like a pack in its own in terms of value. And like you can guarantee to get, like I could pretty much guarantee to win the first round of every 4-2-2 guaranteed. So I'm almost guaranteed to get 2 packs. And it, when I get to the second round, I'm guaranteed that I could play another draft or whatever the 2 tickets. I don't know. Somehow I.
All right.
I guess
so
I'm not
ready. I need to stop you. Okay. So there's a few things. One, you're part of the problem. Like by giving Wizards patronage on these 4-3-2-2s, you're enabling them to keep them at 4-3-2-2. Cause why would they change it? Right. So don't do that. Second thing is, what you're saying might be true of a draft, right? Like it makes you feel warm and safe inside that you can get your, you know, okay, first I have to also address the fact that you said you can guarantee winning in the first round. You cannot. And you do not win every first round. Like you know, Mana Screw and Mana Flood happen equally across the rounds that you play in. And if it happens to come in the first round or your opponent just, you know, nut curves out on you or has the exact answers for your stuff, you're going to lose in the first round. It happens in 4-3-2-2s. You know, as often as it will for your win percentage in the other, levels as well. The problem here though is that you're not thinking long term, right? You're saying for this draft that I enter, I will feel better because I might be able to win a couple of packs and move on to the next one. So what you're doing is you're saying, I'm going to take the low variance route. I'm going to take the nitty safe route here that makes me feel good about myself. But the fact is you're punting value. Like if you want to go infinite on Magic Online, the assumption is that you're going to be drafting quite a bit, right? I mean, you know, if you're going to draft once a month, do whatever you want. Like, who cares, right? Like, you're not going to ever have a sample size that's going to show you any level of anything relevant at all. You're just going to have won some and lost some, and it's not going to matter. But if you're drafting a couple times a week even, and you're wanting to make that price lower, you cannot play 4-3-2-2s. Like, if you want the lowest, you know, price per draft, you have to cut those out of the equation. You just, those have to go immediately. Then your decision is, do I play Swiss or do I play 8-4s? Sure. If you get a bad deck in Swiss, right, and you have to play it for 3 rounds. Well, whatever, man. Like, you're playing Magic. Right? Like, you know, if you lose all 3 rounds of the Swiss, then boo-hoo. Like, draft a better deck, right?
That's why I like the 4-2-2. If I got a bad deck, I get beat the first round. I just, like, drop out. And
you somehow turned this into a positive. Like, this is the good news, right?
It seems like a trap to me. The 4-3-2-2s seem like a trap. I had a buddy who started on Moto, and he played for about a week or two, and he's like, man, I kind of thought I could go infinite, but, like, those 4-3-2-2s, like, every time you won in the first round and then lost, you're only down a pack. So he's like, all right, I'm only down a pack, so I need to pay, you know, I only need to pay for one more pack, and I can do another draft. And then maybe he'd win two, and he'd pay for another pack. And he realized that even though he was winning 2 packs, he was having to buy a pack to draft every single time.
Yeah, and
when he was winning that one round. Like, if you have to win a round just to only be down a pack, how are you ever going to go infinite?
That's right. And
it just seems like a trap. And like my buddy, that it ground so much money out of him because he thought he was playing it smart, not playing the 8-4s.
Yeah, it appeals. I mean, it appeals to me too. Like, for example, if they ran 5-3-2-2s, I'd be all over it. Like, I think that would be sweet. Like, you know, you have the chance to pick up a nice little profit, but it kind of evens things out in the short term where, like, yeah, like you were saying, Marcel, you know, you're good for round one win pretty often. And, you know, so you can kind of keep things on an even keel where you're not like tapped out and having to rebuy. And then all of a sudden you've got 30 packs in your account and you're kind of living rich. And then it's all down again because, you know, Magic drafting is very high variance. And so that's the hard part. You have to be willing to withstand the variance if you want to go for the 8-4s. Now, if you want to draft Swiss, they're much lower variance. I mean, decent to good players will average nearly 2 wins per Swiss. Like, if you're a good player at Magic, you'll be like 1.8, 1.9 to 2 plus sometimes wins on average per round. So you're getting that thing that you wanted. And you're also drafting. You're playing and drafting more, which is, I mean, there's a difference between the way people look at this, right? Some people look at it as a way to like build, right? Like they're building a collection or they're building something on Magic Online. Other people just say, how can I get the next draft that I do the cheapest humanly possible, right? And those people want to draft. Like they're going on here to draft. And if you lose in the first round with a sweet deck, it's kind of nice to be able to just play the next round and the next round with your sweet deck and salvage 2 packs out of it. And also, by the way, you just played a whole draft, which is what you're trying to do anyway. So
true.
There's that. Now, the other things, though, there's more to it than just choosing which queue you go into. There's also choosing – well, there's 2 things mainly, but basically it revolves around rare drafting. So on a high level, you can pick which set you want to draft. And what you do is you go and you compare – the average rare price or the, if there's some peak rares in the set that just make that huge where you can just kind of hit the lotto and hit like a 50 ticket rare, then you grind that set, right? Because that's where the return's at the moment. And then on a more drilled down level, everybody has a number. It's a funny thing among Moto drafters is like, what is the ticket price for a rare where you will not pass it?
I'll
like
tell you,
what is it?
For me.
How much is it?
It's like $5 for me in real life. Mm-hmm. Depending like the vast majority of the time, like if I'm passing a playable card for like $5, I'll do it. If I'm passing like a bomb for $5, I probably won't, but.
Okay.
Even in Vegas and like the draft I had to 3-0 to cash Vegas, I got passive Vendillion Click in the 3rd pack when I was like red black goblins. I didn't even think about it. I just slammed Vendillion Click. I mean,
it is value. And I mean, that thing's worth a lot of money. And when it comes to Magic Online, there's a few tiers of cards. Most of them are in the first tier, which is they're worth essentially nothing, right? Like, you know, like less than a quarter of a ticket or something. Yeah. And then you get to the 1 ticket plus tier, and then you get kind of to the big daddies, right? To the 20 ticket, like the 1 or 2 cards out of an entire set that are worth a bunch. And it's that middle ground that are really tough. A great example, and this is something that I did. And I'm curious what you guys think about this, because I didn't really put a whole lot of scientific thought into it, but I decided when I drafted Return to Ravnica that I was never going to pass a Shockland.
I did that. That's exactly my philosophy.
Same
here. Right
did you
now.
Do that too?
No, that's what I do with Dragon's Bait with my 4/2/2/2s. Like it takes an absolute better card that I can't pass that I will take the shock every time just because I feel it mitigates my loss.
Me too, and I just think that they're gonna go up. I mean, I know that there's a ton of them in circulation now, so they're not like an amazing pickup. But even, there's this weird mentality, and I'm sure you guys have like a name for it, and I'd love to learn more about it, but where people get used to seeing a card too much, and they'll just ship it, even though it's worth 3 or 4 tickets, like that's a booster pack. That's almost a third of your entry for the draft. Like, there's not a whole lot of cards that people will pass, but for some reason these Shocklands, they're just like, I already have 8 of these. I don't need any more. And they'll just, and I just snapped them up. I was getting them 5th and 6th. I mean, I have 26 Steam vents on Moto. Like, and those are all from draft. Just,
you know what?
It.
That's probably why I should be playing the 8-4s, because the people that are playing the 3/4/4s aren't passing those as much. Whereas I rarely see them.
People are like, you know what? It would be nice to take this, but I got to win this draft. I got to take this utility uncommon.
Right.
And
that's why in real life, you get the situations we've had each of the past 2 years where like the Scars Fastlands sit at $3 because they're just everywhere. And then it's not like overnight they become suddenly that much more rare, but people just realize that these are drying up and then they start jumping on them and then they jump, you know, to $15. It's the same thing with the Shocklands right now. People just see them and they see them all over and, you know, they know that they'll probably be worth more someday, but they figure, oh, I can still get them. So they just pass them to you, or in real life, they trade them to you for cheap, and you just hoard them. It allows you to stock up on them now for the payoff later.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. So basically, you know, to wrap up the moto, the slow bleed thing is you want to balance out, you want to make smart decisions about what queues you enter, Marcel, and you also want to take the rares at your personal threshold. I mean, a lot of people, it's one ticket. Like, if it's worth a ticket, they're slamming it. They're just like, look, I'm going to try to keep drafting here. And frankly, one pick in any draft rarely will completely steer it off. Sure, you're giving up a little bit of equity, but if you're getting four or five tickets worth of money, there, it's hard to imagine any pick that would overcome, any one pick in a draft that would overcome right. that.
It just has to be some bomb.
And that's where I feel like the 4-3-3, because you could take that risk and take a card that's not suboptimal, you know, pack one, pick one, rare draft, and it's not going to hurt your draft. So in essence, you kind of get a pack out of it. If I take a shot.
That's funny. I mean, what you're basically saying is like, well, since I'm not playing for as much money, I might as well play worse. Like, it's imagine if you like go to a poker game and it's for 5 cents. You're just like, eh. Whatever, I'm all in. Like, who cares, right? Like, you're gonna, it doesn't matter if you win or lose, right? There's nothing to win in there. But if that was $500, you would play a lot more seriously, you know? So
you're not learning by playing lower status kind of.
Yeah, way. I mean, well, not if you take the thought process on like, well, it doesn't really matter anyway, or this is less important, or it's easier for me, or whatever, right? Like, you still have to do that. And then basically you take those rares and you sell them. You turn them into tickets, and then you turn those into more drafts. The way to really get ahead, of course, in a lot of ways, though, because I've been talking about drafting, and what I led off with was going infinite on Magic Online as a drafter is very, very difficult. It's really hard. But if you play sealed and or especially if you play constructed and you start just jamming daily events, you can do it. Like, you get a deck together, a constructed deck that you're proficient with, and you start 3-1-ing daily events or 4-0-ing them or whatever, and the payouts are big. You get a bunch of packs for those, and you can turn those into tickets, and you can start parlaying it into going near infinite or infinite pretty quickly. Now, if you're limited only, like, I play constructed on Magic Online as well, but I play mostly limited. That's a little different. That is going to probably put you into the slow bleed camp. As opposed to the I'm trying to go infinite camp.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is, I mean, a lot of our listeners are not necessarily, you know, the hardcore grinders like we are, whatever. A lot of it is just the average player who wants to make the hobby less expensive with that slow bleed. So it's very similar to Magic Online, just, yeah, I guess, different. I mean, there's obviously different methods, but it's all the same goal, just to, like you said, you know, it's not always about making money or doing these big specs like we talk about. A lot of it is some of the mundane stuff about, you're selling your cards before rotation, like getting store credit instead of packs, stuff like that. In real life, it's just the same goal.
That's right. It's the same thing. It's just, it's all about minimizing the cost so that you can keep playing the hobby that you love.
Make it as cheap as possible. I completely agree.
If anybody needs any Steam vents.
Actually, how much is on them for?
For me, I'll tell you that much. But yeah, okay. You guys want to go into What's It Worth, or do we want to wrap it up? I don't know how long we've been going.
Let's do What's It Worth, because we skipped a week, and I think we owe our fans at least that.
All right. Well, I think to honor the talk of Moto, we should do What's It Worth for Moto.
Oh God.
Oh, shut up.
No, we're not going to do that. Bad at it for 1 week. We have two people who are Moto people on here. We get to be the
not
experts.
I'll be a donkey on your picks, but I'm not picking a Moto card.
I've actually got a couple of picks that I was curious about, and I'll admit I'm being a little selfish because I also want your guys' advice on a trade, but I want to hear what you guys think about the values of these things first. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So one of them's new and one of them's a little bit older, and these aren't big stumpers. Like, I don't think that these are going to be the ones where you guys are just like, oh, I've never figured this out, but they're more recent. So the first one is the Modern Masters Dark Confidant in foil.
Is that in your pretend Monopoly ticket money?
No.
This is in real life.
Oh, okay.
In paper.
In paper. And the reason, I'll preface this, the reason I'm asking is because there's a dude at my local shop that wants to do a trade with me that involves this card.
Okay. What
foil Modern Masters Dark Confidant.
Yeah, foil Modern Masters Dark Confidant.
Like 75 to 90, somewhere there.
Wait, how much?
It's gonna be more than that, like the non-foil is like 70.
I believe it's 190 to 200.
That's fine though.
I wanted to say like 2...
Yeah,
like,
I'm guessing.
Where ones are price.
Regular ones are $75.
Yeah.
See, I strictly
the non-foil is it.
Right.
So,
They're $19 on Moto.
I bet Cool Stuff doesn't have them. I bet they're like $200.
I've got a price that I found. Am I supposed to tell you guys what the price that I have?
Yeah, I believe that's...
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I mean, we think it's probably 180 to 200 retail. I think we all agree. So,
except for Marcel thinks it's like $20, but
he said
95. Yeah, there we go.
All right. So the price I have is 180. That okay. I looked that up on a couple of sites and kind of did an average.
All right. So where's it cheaper than 180?
Well, potentially at my local game store. So, okay. So here's the other.
A little bit. I know that I looked this up on Star City 2 days ago, and it was 200 then.
Okay. I see. You mean where did I find it?
Yeah.
I looked at the average foil cost on, this is store.tcgplayer.com.
Okay. Okay. I can see that. Sure.
Yeah. So the low is 158, the high is 250, and the median is 180.
Somebody's charging $50 more than Star City. Good luck.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got that. And then, and a dude has that. Now, the other card that I wanted to ask you guys is Scalding Tarn.
Okay.
Oh, well, I actually, this is trending up. I want to say these are 55.
I think
it's
just
I would have said 50. I would have said 50.
I could even guess the paper price. It's like $20 Moto.
I'll tell you, I sold a whole bunch of them at 25 6 months back during modern season because I thought it was going to level out for a while.
And now you're upset with yourself.
I imagine it's 50.
Should I look this up on Cool Stuff and see what they've got it for?
Yeah, I'm curious.
It is 50 Cool Stuff.
Yeah.
About
yeah,
seven.
They're $50.
Okay, yeah.
Now, this dude, he told me that he would trade me, I would give him 3 Scalding Tarn and he would give me this foil Bob. Now, on paper, this seems like a sweet deal, right? I mean, I'm getting like $30 out of it. And cause he just really needs Scalding Tarns and nobody has them and I've got a bunch of them.
Right.
So, do I just do that because of value or are Scalding Tarns long term, like, so here's
no.
my real question.
Scalding Tarn has gone up twice. Scalding Tarn has gone up twice in the last 12 months. I don't see it going up a third time. I think $50, like, I don't think Scalding Tarn is going to go above Wooded Foothills in the next 6 months. That seems insane.
Long term, we're going to have a Modern Masters 2 and Scalding Tarn is going to get reprinted. We're not going to get a foil.
Cards that just got reprinted in the jump they did. And then look at the Zendikar Fetchlands, which haven't been reprinted.
Two or three cards in Modern Masters got a jump. It was two
this
or three cards.
All the foils. You got foil swords that are $200.
Okay. Yeah.
Foil Modern Masters are insane.
These could easily be $75.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think the other thing you have to keep in mind doing this trade is that, sure, on paper you're making money. You know, okay, that's one factor. The other factor, though, is that you're getting the most expensive card in the deal, which typically means like the spread will be better for you. So like Dark Confidant, you know, foil, that's a pretty chase card. So, you know, the price on it's 180. I don't know what buy list on it is offhand, but I imagine it's probably just guessing, you know, 120, 130. Okay.
Okay.
So you take your Scalding Tarns and the buy list on them, even if it's like 35 is like 110. Okay. So you make your money there. So even if each of those Scalding Tarns goes up to $60, right? You're probably adding another like, another $5 each in buy list. Okay. So it's like, basically, if you're trading, even if they were equal value, you would most likely be winning on the buy list, the cash value of the cards, just because you have the most expensive card in it.
Okay. See, that answers my question in a big way, because like what I was worried about with the trade was, well, I've got these three things, right? And if they go up a bit, well, that's times three, right? Where this foil Bob is one thing. If it goes up, it's just one jump that I'll receive from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. And
that's kind of how I feel about it too. I'm actually with you on that.
Yeah,
I think you want to have three of something, but the only problem is those three things have gone up twice very recently.
Okay. And that's a bad thing for me?
Yeah, that is a bad thing.
Okay. Cause it makes it less likely that they'll go up again.
It's soon.
I don't even know that I agree.
Like, how long term are you looking?
I don't know. I mean,
I think you're fine with this at any point. Like, I think this is a slam dunk deal, personally. Like, say the having the most expensive card works a lot better if you're trading a bunch of $2 cards to a $20 card or something. But even in this case, I think you're totally fine with this. I think this is a good trade because you just get the most chase card. Like, if it came down to where you're going to resell it having the $200 card is a lot easier to get a price out of having, instead of having three $70 cards, you know, like.
I
completely disagree, and based on like my outlet, but most people are going to have to use something like a buy list. But if you're going to be selling through like TCG Play or eBay, it's much easier and much quicker to sell those $70 cards. They will move much faster than that $200 foil card.
We're talking about making a trade, like.
And I mean, even in trade though, how many people are coming up looking for a foil, you know, of this Dark Confidant? Like, how many people are coming to you going, I need foil Dark Confidant? There's a reason this guy's coming to you for Scalding cards. Nobody has them in your area. You said it yourself.
So.
That means that there's obviously a demand for them. And there's not a huge demand for these Dark Confidants foil.
There's no clear answer, I guess, is what we're getting here.
You guys are the experts. I come to you for this advice. I can't leave the show without some type of answer here.
I think it all depends on. For me, it would be smarter to take the Scalding Tarns for someone who is looking for, you know, something good in your binder where you're going to find that right guy who wants that foil Dark Confidant, and then you can get good value out of it. Sure, but I don't want to sit on the Dark Confidant for 6 months. I know I won't sit on those Scalding Tarns for 6 months.
Right. So somebody who's in your situation, Marshall, who probably trades, you know, not as seriously as Ryan does and isn't all about just flipping cards for value, like,
right.
If you want the Dark Confidant, because, you know, you want to own it, you want it for your cube or whatever it is you want to do with it. If you would rather have that, do not feel bad about making that trade because even if Scalding Tarns go up, you're not going to lose out in such a way that you should feel guilty about it.
And the other play devil's advocate from my position, the only reason I would say do the trade, even for me, would be because Scalding Tarn is much, much more likely to be reprinted right now than Dark Confidant is again. And I mean,
right.
Infinitely more, like, I think there will be a print in the next 2 years of Scalding Tarn again. I don't think we will see Dark Confidant again in the next 2 years.
I think people are also underestimating the value of these foil Modern Masters cards. Like, they really are. They're so limited of how many cards are actually out there that are foil Modern Masters one that, you know, I think they're going to shoot up a lot more value in the long term. Yeah.
So you, like that sword you mentioned?
Yeah, it's $200 right now because, like, they did the math. Behind, like, how many foil Tarmogoyfs was at GP Vegas? It was something like 45.
It's like 12.
Oh yeah, it's something absurdly low. And you're like, that's out of 4,500 people there, open three packs a piece on top of whatever side events or whatever. So,
I think there's
much less of a foil mythic rare in Modern Masters. So much more that the cards are going to become a lot more rare. Right. And that's going to shoot up the value a lot more in the long term.
And look at it. Okay. Look at it this way. There's, you know, however many Scalding Tarns out there, there's quite a few, like, so it's going to take more to move the price. On the Foil Dark Confidant, there are exactly 17 foils on TCG Player right now. And, like, if below 180, there's, like, less than 10. So, I mean, you know, like, you're going to, it's very difficult for you to feel bad about this trade, I think, the way things go from here. Even if Scalding Tarns all hit 70, you're still going to be sitting with a Dark Confidant that is, that's going to go up about the same pace since there's so few.
That's the only time that art is foiled was in Modern Masters.
Yeah. It's true.
And I think the Scalding Tarns will probably beat the Dark Confidant at one point, but over the long term, the Dark Confidant will be the better saver.
Full prices go up. I'm just saying
you can see it possibly passing it at a certain point, but it's just going to be a peak. But in the long run, you're actually going to be safer doing the Dark Confidant as a much safer and guaranteed bet.
Yeah. In your position especially, I like the Dark Confidant over the Scalding Tarns.
One of the reasons there's no snap right answer here is because our outs are all different.
Right.
So it's really about playing to your outs, and it's about, do you want the Tarns for a deck? Do you want the Confidants for a deck? Are you outing these cards in the short term? Are you outing them in the long term? Are you buy listing? Are you eBaying? So it depends on a lot of factors, which is why everybody is going in informed by their own outs and their own ins. And that's why there's no snap right answer.
Okay, so that makes sense.
It really depends on what you want to do with it, which card you want to pick up, why you're picking them up, and how you plan to out it, and when you plan to out it.
Okay. Well, that's really good to know. I appreciate it, guys. I think I'll do the trade.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would feel safe doing that.
Thing looks sweet.
It's silly in your favor right now, too.
Yeah.
Okay, before we move on, do you like the new art or the old art better? Because when it first came out,
old art.
Everyone was like crapping on the old art. Or crapping on the new art, rather, but, you know, then it became more expensive than the old one for a time. Marshall, what do you think? Do you like the new one or the old one?
I was in that first camp and I was like, oh, the old art's way better. And then I have a new one and an old one next to each other in my binder. And I'm like, oh man, that old art is just disappointing me. So I think I actually like the new art a little better now.
I think one of the reasons I like the old art is, come on, it was a fucking invitational card.
Yeah.
Like, he had to win a whole tournament to get that art. And they're like, you know what? Meh, screw you. You know, we did a new art for Kai and it was him again. And then we reprinted, Finkel's card and it was the same art. But for you, Bob Marr, I think your eyes are a little too close together. So, we're just going to reprint a completely new art.
Yeah, I'm actually a Bob Marr fan too. So I still, like, my playset is the old ones.
Yeah.
I refuse to budge, but just looking at them from an art perspective, I got to say that the new one kind of grew on me.
It could have been worse though. They could have made him an old black woman. I'm just saying that's what they did to Pykula.
Pykula? Yeah. Oh,
the new Mage. They turned Meddling Mage into an old black lady.
Well, I mean, they do that with every invitational card, so I think they're going to do that for everyone coming on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of what that initial reaction to the new Dark Confidant art was. People were just, you know, oh, this isn't Bob Marr. I'm upset. So
I'm still upset.
You're always going to be upset. go back to Heavy Medic complain.
Modern Masters was such a good set that, like, I had to fixate on something to be upset about, so that was it.
So let me ask you guys this, because really, like, Modern Masters is one of the best draft formats just because it's kind of like almost a cube. And then how do you feel about this effect we're not going to really draft it again?
I think that the moment someone busts a box out a year from now, it doesn't matter what it costs, people will pay to draft it. Sealed product is left, it's only going up.
I think if we had AVR to draft right now, it would feel worse. But, like, we have a choice right now between M14, which doesn't suck, and RGD, which really doesn't suck. So, like, it's not all that disappointing that we can't draft Modern Masters if we at least have a good draft format to go into.
Also, it can come back out on Magic Online.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
That would be insanely popular, too.
The more you guys talk about it, the more you make me, like, maybe want to try it. But, like, the first time I tried Magic Online, my draft bugged. And I won the first game, lost the second game, and it told me I lost the match. And I never went back.
See, people have had that similar problem. It's about technical issues that get people away from Magic. Like, they may do a misclick and kill their game because they did a bad click and there's no way to get, you know, takesies, backsies, or whatever. And people just turn off.
From the experience, and like, after, you know, Todd Anderson's thing and the top 8 of a BTQ the other day and all this stuff happening, it's just, maybe one day I'll get into it.
Yeah, you can also draft at like 3 a.m, which you can't do at your LGS. So there are advantages to Moto. Even with the technical difficulties, the convenience factor is still just ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I drafted with pants on.
Me either, and I'm not even on Moto.
Winnie's.
No shirt, no shoes, no service. All right, I got a shirt and shoes. Let's go draft.
That's right. That's when you get the rare trash. You get the Armada Worms and you dab another worm. Coming in crashing.
All right. Well, I think we're about ready to wrap up for this week. Big thank you again to Marshall for coming on. Thank you.
So where can they find you at, Marshall, if they don't already know, you know, Limited Resource, number one cast, honestly, in Magic?
I'm on Twitter, Marshall_LR, and all the podcasty stuff, and everything I do, in fact, has links on LRcast.com.
All right, go to LRcast. Yeah, he's doing it big. Oh, and while we're at here, I want to tell people to check out Mana Echoes. That's the new site where you'll be finding podcasts. We got Horde Nations going up there. Brainstorm Ruby will be there, and there'll be some other podcasts on there. Planeswalker Asylum is going to be on there, too. So check it out. It's going to be more podcasts there. It's going to be basically a resource for podcasts. And if you have a quality podcast, hit us up, and we'll try to get you on the network as well.
So Marcel, Planeswalker Asylum, you just recorded an episode with them, didn't you?
Oh yeah, check that out. That's going to be up probably tomorrow, which will be Wednesday, because this is going to be up on Friday.
So 2 days ago.
Yeah.
What you're saying. Tomorrow's 2 days ago. Hey, Corbin, they're from your area, right?
It's true. They, those guys all live in Norman.
How many times have you been on their podcast?
None yet. None
you haven't? Yet. Really? Marcel's been on their cast and you haven't? That's weird.
Marcel, where do you live again?
I live in Oakland, California. And you know what? It takes initiative. I hit them up because I like their cast. They're actually one of the few casts that I have in my rotation that I will listen to every week. So yeah, I bet them at GP Vegas.
I just made it to an episode without being mean.
Shut up, Corbin.
Almost.
Well, we didn't have the banter.
Check out Planeswalker Asylum if you haven't. Those guys are a lot of fun.
Oh, and since we didn't cast last week I did an episode of Heavy Meta that if you haven't listened to, you should check it out on, manadeprived.com.
Yes, check it out on manadeprived. Yeah, it was a good episode and you did good. You weren't all financially heavy as you were the first time you were on there.
We got pre-complaining on Twitter. I was like, Jason again? Oh, I don't want to hear a bunch of finance bullshit. So we tried to keep that to a minimum.
Actually, we might have to change our slogan to Shut Up Jason, because that seems to be the sentiment now.
Oh boy. What am I, Charlie Brown?
Hey, at least you could bite back. You got some good caps.
I'm not some sort of Corbin that you can just tell to shut up willy-nilly.
Yeah.
I just laugh nervously and hope that it goes away.
That's how I got through life.
Are we talking about Corbin?
Yep.
We're talking about nervously and hope Corbin goes away?
I don't think that. Like, I grew bigger than everyone else. Once you're 6'3", you don't get made fun of as much.
That's not true. I make fun of you all the time.
That's because you live behind the,
anonymity. That's not true at all. I just rode out to Nevada with you and still made fun of you.
It's true. We were in a car with you for like 48 hours and you didn't threaten to kill any of us.
Alright, yeah. You guys are internet gangsters. Wow. I can't believe you guys are so hard. I am scared. enter the song. We're out of here. This is Brainstorm Brewery. Catch us next week. Later.
See ya.
Goodbye!
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Yeah, good cast. Marshall, thank you again for coming in.
Hey, yeah, no, that was fun. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Actually, all that shit in the middle where it was just Marshall talking and none of the rest of us were saying anything was quality podcasting.